And if you want to know about her work, you can go to her website. It's FrancoiseBorzat.com, and she spells her name FrancoiseBorzat, Borzat, Borzat, FrancoiseBorzat.com. Or you can get there through their New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. So we're getting to the point we're talking about integration and having a guide to help us with this and really to help interpret what the journey was about and what was the message of the journey and how can we incorporate it in our lives. So please say something about that.
Yes, this is possibly the most important part of this material that I gathered in the book, because part of this process of entering expanded states through whatever technique is a process of transformation. It may be a process of curiosity led by a certain, you know, I'm intrigued with doing a vision quest, or I'm intrigued to start this sweat lodge, or I'm intrigued to be guided in a mushroom journey, that I'm curious and I want to do that and I want to do that well. But then what really is calling? We go back to the intention. What was the source of this curiosity? What in us is trying to evolve or change or heal or expand or get better in some way, right? Or get deeper or get wider? And once we have explored this experience, this journey, then how is that experience becoming a transformation and not just a fabulous moment, a fabulous day, or fabulous retreat? But it becomes who we are, not just something we do. And I'm really interested in the process of empowerment and individuation and autonomy. I really don't want people to be depending on, you know, a practice or a drug, medicine, even if it's sacred. And I don't want people to even eventually be dependent on a guide or having someone to tell them. So I want people to take charge of their growth and their healing. And the integration is exactly that, is for the guide to help the journeyer identify what has happened in the journey, what's important, how is the person feeling after the experience, and how is that going to be cultivated in an everyday practice.
You know, I can remember all of this is just reminding me of the first session I ever had with substances, and it was with a guide. And however, I went into it with curiosity. You mentioned curiosity. I didn't have anything written down about, oh, well, here's what I want to get out of it or anything like that. And the guide did not prepare me in any way for what to expect, except to say, I said, how long will this last? And he said, oh, it'll be about 8 hours. You know, and I remember like thinking, looking at my watch or something. And as soon as the visuals and things started to come, I wanted to back out. I said, oh, I don't want this. And I just went and pulled the covers up over my head. And I said, oh, I'm just going to go to sleep. And of course, no, you're on the train. You're on the journey. And so that's why I appreciate your book so much, Francoise, because it really warns us and gives us an idea of what to expect, how to prepare. Even these inventories, you have just many, many pages of the kinds of inventories, self-inventories we can take, and to know where we are and what we're thinking and how we are. And then it prepares us for what a little bit, not that we can totally prepare, but at least we can come in a little more relaxed.
I think we can come into those experiences with more awareness of who we are and what is well in our lives and what is a little weaker and what is totally missing, right? This five-aspect model that I like to refer to as a preparation, as a way to look at the categories of experiences of the journey itself and as practices of integration, this holistic model is a way to evaluate the state of balance of one's life. So if someone enters the preparation phase realizing that they don't take care of their body very well at all, they may have a good emotional life, a spiritual practice, they may have, you know, friends and relationship, community, and they may be in nature, but they don't eat well, they don't sleep well, they eat junk food, or they drink too much, or they smoke pot every single day, you know, in a way that is not very fruitful for their overall life. Well, as a guide, when I look at the inventory and I look at the state of this five aspect, if I see that the body aspect is so weak or so depleted, I will put a lot of attention in preparing the person with creating more balance, and orienting the client to look at what's going on there. What is the source of this depletion and absence of self-care? Where have you learned this? And my curiosity goes to what is weak.
So that might even happen before the journey takes place.
Absolutely.
So this is not learned on the journey itself,
no.
But it's something you talk about ahead of time.
That's right. In the preparation phase, I have my inventories, or I give them the inventories, and I have them look at that. Or if they go on a meditation retreat, or if they go in a dance retreat, I said, where are you in your life? Where are you in relation to this five aspect? What is strong in you, a good resource? What is well honed and practiced? And what is weak? Because this five aspect really represent the holistic aspect of life.
So even if we don't take any journey at all, just going through those inventories, I just found them fabulous. And I want to say this about the inventories, because we're used to thinking about the triad, mind, body, spirit, you know, but you go further than that. You also include community and environment. Can you say something about why you do that?
And you know, my good friend Ralph Metzner, who sadly passed away in March, but was very interested in this manuscript.
And he wrote the foreword.
He wrote the foreword, and I'm the last foreword he wrote, apparently.
Wonderful.
And he worked on the manuscript with me very closely. And that was his interest, was the fact that the body, mind, spirit was expanded into including community and environment. And I think that the body, mind, spirit have been pretty much mainstreamed by now, we can say. The connection between what we think and how our body functions, or how we are practicing a spiritual technique for like meditation or even yoga, all this has been woven into the mainstream awareness of personal development and health, human health and mental health. But the community and environment have not been so. And I'm finding that paramount, because in traditional cultures, everything has to do with community and environment. The rituals happen on the earth. They are all very connected with earth, maybe in Africa, maybe in South America, maybe in Mexico. People are farmers, people, you know, carry their wood, people cook on the wood, which is not a good idea necessarily, but you know, they are very much connected with nature. And they are in community a lot. They're not living very separately. The family lives together. The cousin lives next door. The grandmother lives with the family. The cousins live in the same town or the same village. And the sense of communal co-living, sometimes in a huge compound, or even just knowing who your neighbors are, or having various rituals. I was just in Mexico. I came back 2 days ago, and there were memorial services, and the whole village comes to honor the dead and come to pray. There's like 300 people arrive to support the family. These are practices that involve community, right? And they could be religious practices or rituals, sacred rituals, of course. And we in the modern industrialized world have not really paid very much attention to the power the healing power and the growth power of community and of the environment, which, you know, we are in a bad shape now, so we have to consider what is our relationship with nature and how aspects of nature really are part of the sacred rituals, especially when they involve vision quest, in which you sit on the land, sweat lodge, in which you sit on the land, meditation, in which you sit on the land, you know, dance, in which you move your body on the land, and all these medicine traditions which have to do with ingesting material that is grown by the earth.
I think that one of the descriptions you give, and the book is filled with some examples and mm-hmm. some of your own writing, your own journaling, mm-hmm. and some from other people. And one of them, and I believe it was one of yours, where in one of your journeys, Pele came to you. Mm-hmm. And it was so beautiful to think about how she comes from the center of the earth, this fire that we're held up by. Can you describe that somehow?
Yes, that journey was really very big for me, because in that journey, not only I connected with a feminine archetype force, but also with the magma of the earth, literally her blood. And that connected me with my blood and my own power, my own fuel, my own circulation, my own intensity, right? And my own possibility of expression, because Pele is all that, right? She is the magma, and she's also the flowing magma, or the erupting magma, right? So she's the expression of what she has inside. And for me, it was a very empowering experience, and it was early on in my work with medicines. And I was connected with that potential in myself, and it was deeply, deeply empowering.
So now you carry that with you as part of, you know, your cellular memory.
That's right.
Now, and that's a good cellular memory.
That's right. That's right. So then the issue, or the topic, is this memory of Pele has lived in me forever. And a journey like this is branded in one psyche and one memory, and I cannot erase it. I cannot ever forget it, right? And my then work has been to feel that fuel in myself, to find ways to reconnect with it and express it. So it may be in songs, or it may be in artwork, or it may be my connection with the land, or it may be through this book. My passion for life and my passion, my fuel, has been connected with this memory of Pele.
That's great. Thank you so much for helping us to get an experience of what the potential of these mm-hmm. journeys. I'm here with Françoise Borzat, and she is the author of Consciousness Medicine, Indigenous Wisdom, Entheogens, and Expanded States of Consciousness for Healing and Growth. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You're listening to New Dimensions. I'm here with Françoise Borzat, and she's the author of Consciousness Medicine, Indigenous Wisdom, Entheogens, and Expanded States of Consciousness for Healing and Growth. And Françoise, in this time right now, there is research going on to legalize or to make some of these substances available for medical reasons. And that's like on the cusp of being able, let's say, to for PTSD, that they're really almost right on the cusp of being able to legalize that. And then there are other things. There's the legalization or the decriminalization of different kinds of substances that is going on. So what can you say about where are we now, and what is your opinion of all of this?
Mm-hmm. Well, I have been closely following the diligent effort and research and incredible stamina of the research made be through MAPS for the PTSD treatment with MDMA.
And say what MAPS stands for, M-A-P-S.
Yes, Multidisciplinary Association for Psychedelic Studies.
Okay, great.
Which is an organization who has devoted its purpose, it's a nonprofit, 501c3, who now has a be-profit corporation, to basically medicalize the use of MDMA for PTSD treatment for post-traumatic stress disorder and medication-resistant PTSD. So I've been following that. I've been following the research in Johns Hopkins University, NYU, with the usage of psilocybin, which is synthesized psilocybin, extracted psilocybin. They're not working with mushrooms themselves, for the treatment of anxiety, depression, some treatment, exploration of addiction treatment, as well as people diagnosed with life-threatening disease, and that creating an immense amount of anxiety for them. And all these researches have been really very well conducted. Oh, there's also the research at Johns Hopkins regarding the benefit, the merit of spiritual experiences with psilocybin, and how is that an enhancement of human life, and is that maintaining itself through an extended period of time, and how is that beneficial to people's life, which is a very valid exploration, I think.
Well, what is some of the outcome of that one in particular?
Well, the person in charge of the study, who is Roland Griffith, has found that people who have had a meaningful spiritual experience during a psilocybin journey tend to be more friendly, more connected with their family, more creative, more patient, calmer, more healthy, more involved in their community. So again, we see the five-aspect model being addressed in these different variables that they were measuring. Mm-hmm. They take care of their body better. And the sense of overall happiness and uplift was measured, of course, after the experience, and was measured a year after. And a year after, it was still valid. They were still having this benefit.
It has a residual effect.
So it's stuck. You know, the way they were feeling and the way they were relating to people in their life and to themselves was, in fact, maintaining its value and its potency. Maybe less, but they were still seeing the benefit of it. So I think that all this research is really valid. I'm really glad that all these various researchers have made so many progress. I think that what I'd like to weave in, and I am in discussion with them, and I am invited to discuss these topics with them, is that we want to make sure we acknowledge, express gratitude, and include in this movement forward the traditional cultures from which these practices come from. Because the danger is to just do what we've done in the past. We colonize, we take something, we go away, and we don't turn back. And that is, I think,
we pluck it out of its
context.
Yes.
We pluck it out of its context, and we don't turn back to say thank you. And that practice of basically extracting, we extracted gold, we extracted, God forbid, people out of Africa, and now we extract medicines, and then we put them in a lab, and we use them as if they were not belonging anywhere, and as if we don't look back and thank the people who have kept it alive for thousands of years. And so that's the danger. The danger is disconnected and lack of gratitude, of mutual interfacing. So the medicine that we've had, the meds we've had here, have been born out of plants, have been born out of very precious plants extracted from the jungle.
So they may be synthesized now, but they originally...
That's right. Originally, they were existing in a natural environment, in a natural culture of a specific tradition. Mm-hmm. And now we're synthesizing them and putting them in a hospital environment. And I think that the danger is to disconnect from the tradition.
Isn't there something like an African hallucinogen that's being used for addiction?
Ibogaine.
Ibogaine, yes.
Mm-hmm. So originally Ibogaine comes from Iboga. And Iboga is a Bwiti tradition from the Pygmy of Gabon. And it's a very powerful practice, which I have not done, even though I know some very powerful masters from that tradition I've had the honor to meet. And that practice is very powerful, I've heard, very intense. Has to do with ancestors and past lives and the spirit of the ground, and it's very powerful. And so originally it's a very, very traditional framework led by a master around a fire, and you have to paint your body. It's a very intricate ritual. But now they've extracted ibogaine, which is very potent for the treatment of addiction, opiate addiction. And there were some clinics existing, and there's still some clinics existing out of United States, legal clinics, of course, which treat people with heroin addiction very successfully. And treating addiction in general, the addictive process. I know someone who went to do ibogaine in a broad clinic who was addicted to sodas, Coca-Cola, sodas.
Like sugars.
Sugar
stuff.
Thing. Yeah. And he came back, he never touched it again.
Oh, yeah.
And so it's not necessarily about heroin, it's about the addictive process.
When you talk about going back to the original indigenous roots of these ceremonies and these plants and honoring that, what about co-opting as people not of those cultures or non-indigenous people, mm-hmm. Using those ceremonies? What can you say about that co-opting?
Yeah, we're talking about cultural misappropriation,
yes.
Right? Like going somewhere, doing something, a ritual, and then pretending to own it and take it out of its context and sort of being a bit of a charlatan or, imposter and trying to pose like this. Well, it happens a lot. There are a lot of people who feel like after a couple of journeys or ceremonies with some shaman, they can have the audacity of posing as healers and shamans, and that's a problem. Some people have a good personality and a good intuition, and they may do no harm. The issue is how skilled are they? Yes. How deep can they take people into these experiences? How safe is it? Do they understand the intricacy of such rituals? It's very complicated. I've been to Mexico for 20 years, and I still don't understand everything about it.
Well, and I'm going to say, with you, your teacher, Julieta, has called you an interpreter. Mm-hmm. So she's actually commissioned you. She's given you a kind of...
Mandate.
All right. Mandate. So say something about that.
Yes. I had no ambition whatsoever. I was just there for myself, learning what I could, being so grateful, bringing people to her and sitting with her in this journeys, which was so transformative and so wonderful. And I just did that, right? And then she talked to me and she said, in the prayer, she was talking during the night, and it was Spanish, so I could understand. And she said, Francisca, which is what she called me, is here to interpret my tradition. And I talked to her the day after, and I said, well, what do you mean by that? And she said, well, you know our tradition, and you know the way to talk about it that is correct, that is respectful, and that is appropriate to what the world can hear. And truly, there are things that might be a little too esoteric for people that I would not say. the way they do certain rituals or what they believe in, which might be too foreign for the world here that I might not share. But on the other hand, I would share what is appropriate and what is potent and what is useful for this world here. So she gave me this kind of mandate to do that, and she knew I was writing this book. She passed away a year ago now, and her daughters are continuing the work, which is wonderful. But she entrusted me with that.
That's wonderful. I'm so sorry to hear that she's passed on. I didn't know that. So.
Well, she got ill, and she was 82, and
yes.
She was a woman of, she had 11 children, and she was a hardworking woman, so... You know, it was an old age for that
that's
culture.
That's true. It's good to know the work continues on.
Yes.
I want to thank you so much for being part of the New Dimensions series today.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
I've been here with Françoise Borzat, and she is the co-author of Consciousness Medicine, Indigenous Wisdom, Entheogens, and Expanded States of Consciousness for Healing and Growth. Her website is françoiseborzat.com, and that she spells her name FRANCOISEBOURZAT, françoiseborzat.com. Or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You've been listening to New Dimensions. This is program number 3687.
New Dimensions Radio has been making a difference on our planet since 1973, thanks to the generosity of our listeners. You too can help make a difference with a tax-deductible donation or membership. Please visit our website, newdimensions.org, and just click the donate button. You can also subscribe to our free weekly podcasts and find over 1,000 hours of audio dialogues in our searchable archive. New Dimensions is produced by New Dimensions Radio in Santa Rosa, California, USA. Our executive producer is Justine Willis-Toms. Our post-production editor is Lou Judson. This program was recorded at Strawberry Hill Productions, a full-service podcast production studio in Novato, California. We sincerely thank all of you who have supported us by being members of Friends of New Dimensions, as well as members of our affiliate stations. My name is Dan Drayson. On behalf of everyone at New Dimensions, whose endeavors make this program possible, I'm wishing you well. New Dimensions Radio is an independent producer supported by listener contributions. To find out more about the program you've just heard, to subscribe to our free weekly newsletter and our New Dimensions and New Dimensions Cafe podcasts, and to access thousands of other programs in the New Dimensions archive, please visit our website, newdimensions.org. That's newdimensions.org, or call us at 707-468-5215. That's 707-468-5215. Please join us next time as we explore...
All I can get is static or variations on the central musical rhythm.
I only wish there was some way we could tell it to shut up. It's driving me crazy, and it keeps getting louder.
We have no way of estimating the volume this creature can produce.
The only logical solution is to listen to CJSF 90.1 FM. They broadcast from Burnaby Mountain in British Columbia. Let's tune in now.
This is Bird Note. A few times each year, the eastern paradise Waida puts on its party clothes. This small finch, found in East Africa, is just 5 inches long, with a black tail, brown back, and patterned face markings. But when it's time to mate, the male molts into breeding plumage. His head turns glossy black, his neck golden yellow, and breast a vivid orange. But the best part? He sprouts extravagant long black tail feathers 2 or 3 times the length of his body. The male paradise waida's tail feathers are not just super long, but also broad, as if they belong to a much bigger bird. It almost looks like the bird is wearing a long black cape. That's how it got its nickname, the widow bird, because it looks like a widowed woman in black mourning clothes. It's a competitive scene during breeding season, with lots of long-tailed males chasing one another. The more a male gets chased, the more likely he is to grow a slightly shorter tail, which could make it harder for him to stand out for the ladies. So just remember, never underestimate the power of a good party outfit. For Bird Note, I'm Mary McCann.